I'm Steve Potter, and welcome to Cityscape. Trevor Tishner played the piano and loved ragtime music. If you listened to this radio station in the 1970s and 80s, you might remember his weekly program, Ragophile. Do you recognize this?
Hello and welcome to Ragophile. This is your host, Trevor Tishner, bringing you an hour of genuine ragtime here on KWMU. Well, we have several new records for you in this series of Ragophile this summer. And the first is from Bob Erdos's great Stomp Off label out of York, Pennsylvania. And this is a new ragtime orchestra record by Terry Waldo's orchestra. And the title of the LP is Spectacular Ragtime. And this one also features some very fine vocals by Susan LaMarche. Let's listen to the first two cuts of the record. First is one of the most popular rags of its day, the Wild Cherries Rag by Ted Snyder, which came out in 1908. And following this will be one of Tony Jackson's songs from 1917, Some Sweet Day.
Does that bring back memories? Trevor Tishner performed. He composed and was a major collector of original ragtime sheet music and piano rolls. He passed away last month after a stroke at the age of 74, leaving behind two children, a daughter, Virginia, and a son, Andrew. Andy Tishner joins us now. Welcome to the program.
All right, thanks.
What's that like to hear Dad's voice?
Well, it's, I don't know, it's a little odd. He sounds a little bit like me, so that's all I can think. And I think when he was recording that, he was actually younger than I am now, which is sort of a strange realization.
Well, first, condolences to you and your family on
your loss.
Thank you. So recent at that. You and your sister are both musicians. I guess you credit your dad for that.
Well, sure. I mean, it wasn't, you know, the only thing that was kind of pushed on us was piano lessons when we were both young. Didn't take with me, but obviously stuck with Virginia. So.
I think your dad had the same story. We'll get to that later. Your father was a founding member of the St. Louis Ragtimers, who performed together for more than 50 years at Gaslight Square and for years on the Goldenrod Showboat. Tuba player Don Franz and banjo player Al Stricker were part of all of that, founding members as well, and they're here today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And I think there's one other gentleman that was part of the part of it all in the beginning. Bill Mason, was it?
Bill Mason, yes.
Still around.
Cornet player.
Still playing.
Around. Yeah.
In fact, it was just a few months ago that the St. Louis Ragtimers, including Trevor, played right next door here at the Sheldon.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about that night?
Both performances went very well. And I'm so thankful for that because that's the last time we played with Traber. And looking back on it, I'm so happy that the performances clicked as well as they did.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you didn't know it was going to be the last time. I'm assuming he died of a stroke, so I'm assuming this sort of came out of the blue, and you know, it wasn't like he was ill. Or
he'd had some health issues early last year, but the stroke was sort of a bolt of lightning. So.
Well, Andy, for those people that don't know, what did music and ragtime in particular mean to your father?
Well, I mean, it was sort of his life's work, literally. I mean, it was one of his first true loves. And, you know, I mean, he started in this probably early 50s, you know, listening to early rag records. I think the Joe Fingers Car records came out in the early 50s. And, you know, it was just something that he talked about it, almost couldn't explain it, really. Just loved it, you know, loved this music. Mm-hmm. And then back in those early days, started collecting this stuff. You know, the sheets and, you know, piano rolls. And, I mean, it literally became his life's body of work.
Yeah, and Don and Al, I'm sure you were at his house many times. I've heard stories about what that place was like.
Oh, yeah, yes. Had sheet music all over. I remember he invited me out to his home to see his collection. And I couldn't believe it when I walked into the downstairs room where they had a player piano, but The room was covered with sheet music of tunes in mint condition, and I'd never seen anything like that. Traber got me into loving ragtime music, and we also became great friends.
What do you remember, Don?
I remember talking with Traber about taking piano lessons. He started about age 5, and his parents kept him taking lessons, and he really didn't take to it. And finally, the piano teacher said, "Now I'm going to let you pick a song to work on." And he picked Maple Leaf Rag, and that was it.
Yeah.
Let's sample some of his music, Andy. Chestnut Valley was a piece that he was pretty well known for. What can you tell us about this?
Well, it's written in a sort of a commemoration. It was the Chestnut Valley. I mean, you guys feel free to chime in here. You guys probably know the history better than I do, but it was the Chestnut Valley was that sort of that, wasn't that sort of that section near downtown around Union Station area where there was just tons of ragtime going on. That was sort of the boiling center
of the old Mill Creek Valley. Isn't that what they called it? Around Union Station, they tore down in the early 60s.
Correct.
Yeah.
It was a place where they had many taverns, a few bordellos here and there were there.
Is there a connection there?
Oh, yeah. Well, they kind of worked together, yeah. And, of course, ragtime was played there, especially Tom Turpin's Rosebud Saloon, which was at 2222 Market Street. And I remember when they were tearing down that section of town, the Rosebud was the last building still standing. So I had a convertible car at the time, and we put the roof down, and we went down and swiped the door off the place. And while we were there, a guy came by, and we're taking the door, and he said, "Okay, boys," he said, "take what you want," he said, "but don't forget, leave some for me." So that was the last building.
What did you take?
The door.
Front
door. Oh, you actually took the front door.
Yeah, we actually took the door, yeah.
And where is that now?
It got burned in a fire at the...
The Natchez Queen, wasn't it?
No, the tavern down there.
Levy House Bar.
Which was an affiliate of the Goldenrod Showboat. And, well, we lost that.
Well, let's hear that piece now. Chestnut Valley.
Yeah.
And that is Trevor Tischner on the piano. We are remembering his life. He passed away recently at the age of 74, and he was, I guess, the go-to ragtime guy in St. Louis for a long, long time. We're talking with his son, Andy Tischner, and with fellow St. Louis ragtimers Al Stricker and Don Franz. And one thing about his name I just want to clear up, Randy, because Al was saying Traber. I sort of said Trebor.
Yeah.
What's exactly correct?
Well, Traber.
Traber.
Traber. And it's Robert spelled backwards.
Well, go ahead. Since you brought that up, there's a story about that. Was his dad's name.
It's my grandfather's name. Robert was Robert W. Tischner, old Doc Tischner from the Sappington area. His first name was Robert, and so they just reversed it, and it was Traber. He always got Trevor with a V. He got mail every day with Trevor.
But that's such an unusual thing to do, or maybe it wasn't. I mean, did other people do that, or was that just something his parents came up with?
I actually don't know. And, the funny thing, it was no fuss was ever made over it or anything. It just was. It was just, was just a, sort of a curious thing, but nobody obsessed on it.
Did he ever talk about it, his name, that you remember?
No, he never made an issue of it. People would call him Trabe sometimes.
Yeah, Trabe?
Yeah, Trabe. Hey, Trabe.
Yeah. We want to invite our audience to join us if they'd like to, if they have something, perhaps a remembrance of the St. Louis Ragtimes, or Traber in particular, from the Goldenrod Showboat. I imagine there are a lot of people that still remember that. When did that finally go out of business?
It was, well, it got moved to St. Charles. Don, you probably remember.
Around 1990 or?
1996.
1996. Well, if you have a memory of Mr. Tishner or the Ragtimers, feel free to join us with that at 382-8255. That's area code 314-382-TALK. We'd love to hear from you. And I want to read an email that we just received from pianist and composer Kim Portnoy, and who I, you know, Andy.
Yeah, he's a teacher over at Webster University.
Did he work with your dad as far as
No, just a mutual admiration society.
Well, Kim Portnoy wrote this. Traber was a musician of great integrity, totally dedicated to ragtime piano. He himself was a master musician. I envied his left hand. Though I didn't know him well, I occasionally had the opportunity to perform on the same concert with him. He was a very gracious man who was very appreciative and supportive of other musicians. He was a St. Louis treasure and will be missed.
Nice.
Do you think that echoes other people's sentiments?
Oh, yes. Yes. I've never heard anyone say a bad word about Traber. He was one of the, probably the quietest, most gentle person I ever met in my life. Mm-hmm. He was a pleasure to be near.
Andy, we were talking earlier about, you know, how people always say that of people. Nicest guy I ever met.
Yeah, everybody always says that. Oh, yeah, you know this guy, nicest guy you ever met. Well, it was, you know, that was, my dad was the real deal. He really
yes,
was.
He
the,
was.
Really was the nicest, you know, I mean, being, you know, his son and, you know, I mean, if he was unhappy with something, he let you know in his own his own special way. But no, I mean, he really was the nicest, gentlest guy you ever met, really. Yeah.
And isn't it true, wasn't he sort of a stay-at-home dad, at least during the daytime?
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me how that worked.
Well, my mom had a job with the government. She was a cartographer, worked for the government. She had the day gig, and he was the one getting us kids up in the morning, making breakfast, and, you know, taking us to school, and... You know, it was, you know, that was his, kind of his gig, was, you know, taking care of us kids during the day. So, yeah.
And you guys knew him from early on. Which one of you actually founded, were you both in it from the beginning, the Ragtimers? That would have been you, right, Al?
Yes. We were, I'll tell you how it kind of got started. Traber and I said to me, Al, you got to hear this piano player, Bob Dortch. He's playing in Joplin, Missouri at the Holiday Inn. So we went down there to hear him, and he did everything. Told jokes, sang songs, played good ragtime. And he asked us to play an intermission. So we played an intermission, and the crowd liked it. So then he said, well, you know, I got a night down here where I can't be here. Could you guys play it? I said, yeah, and I can get a tuba player too, which was Don. So we went down there, and we did very well. And on the way home, Don said, a guy called me about getting a band together on Gaslight Square. So we interviewed on Labor Day. The owner said, well, there won't be much there. We can hear you guys. Well, we fooled them. We called everybody we knew in town, and the place was packed. Played one set, and the guy said, you're hired. We'll start with Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. So that lasted 52 years.
Wow. We are going to take some of your calls at 382-8255, 382-TALK in a couple of minutes. But remember, we are remembering Traber Tishner, and you're listening to St. Louis Public Radio. We're going to hear another piece of music before we take phone calls, a Bucksnort Stomp.
Oh, yeah.
Would you guys say something about that before we hear it?
Sure. Bucksnort, there's a little town called Bucksnort, Arkansas. And Jeanette,
my mom,
your mother, was raised there.
Buck Snort.
Buck Snort. Buck Snort. And yeah. It got that name from the making the moonshine. It was so thick in the air that the wild animals would sniff and snort. And that's how it got the term Buck Snort. So Traber wrote Buck Snort, Stomp, and he considered it a gift to his wife. So that was how it all came about.
Did you have one to add something, Don?
Well, it was in a style of music that fit the area also. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it did. Yeah.
All right, let's give it a listen. Buck, Snort, Stomp.
Right.
In the state of Arkansas, there's a very small town by the name of Buck Snort, which consists of a cemetery, a filling station with one pump. The way it got the term Buck Snort, years gone by, they used to do a lot of moonshining in the area, and the bucks could smell it, so they would do a lot of snorting. The professor, feeling very sentimental one afternoon, wrote a tune after this spot called the Buck Snort Stomp, otherwise known as an Arkansas Hellraiser.
And today we're remembering the life and career of ragtime pianist and composer Traber Tischner. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Cityscape. This is St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Steve Potter. This is Cityscape. And today we're remembering the life and work of ragtime pianist and scholar Traber Tischner, who passed away last month at the age of 74. With us in the studio, his son, Andy, and members of the St. Louis Ragtimers, which have performed for over 50 years, Don Franz and Al Stricker. And, you guys have been with the Ragtimers for more than 50 years. You can't say that. Are there other members that hold that same record?
Well, Bill Mason, our cornet player.
So you all were from the very beginning?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. All, mm-hmm.
What
yeah.
are the chances of that, seriously?
I don't know.
Forget it.
Yeah.
Let's take a phone call. And Andy, I think this is someone that you know. It's a lady that plays in the symphony who knew your dad, Felicia.
Oh, yeah. Bassoonist with the St. Louis Symphony. Yeah.
Hi, Felicia. You're on Cityscape. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Andy, please accept my condolences to you and your family upon the loss of your father.
Thank you, Felicia. I appreciate that.
Felicia, could you share how you met his dad and just what you remember about that?
Yeah, well, I didn't meet him very often. I only heard him play once, which is a great pleasure. My parents were friends with him, mm-hmm. and in their retirement, they collected all kinds of antiques, including sheet music, and a really fond memory is them coming across a particularly beautiful graphic on whether it was a ragtime piece or Scott Joplin work, and my mother saying, ooh, we have to put that away for Traber, so they'd buy it and they'd put it in a flattened out brown paper bag and then tell Traber where they were going to be, and if he liked it enough, he bought it, and it's a life well spent making beautiful music for other people. Andy, I know you have that gift, and it's such a pleasure to hear you with the orchestra, and know that your father brought a lot of people a lot of happiness.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Felicia. We appreciate that.
Thanks, Don. Bye-bye.
I'm Steve. Anyway, she's thinking of Don Marsh. But Andy, Felicia made reference to it. You've played with the symphony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on what they call their extra list. I'm sort of a hired gun. I come in and a little bit more of the pops material. I come in and play you know, played lead trumpet stuff with them.
Let's take another call at 382-8255, 382-TALK. Teddy's calling from Overland. Hi, you're on Cityscape, Teddy. Go ahead.
Yes. Several years ago at the Scott Joplin House at the replica of the Red Blood Saloon, I had the great pleasure of hearing almost the entire Trevor Tishner family. Andy, you were there with your wife, with your daughter, and Elizabeth's husband, Marty Eggers, was there. And I think the other ragtimers were there in the audience. And it was certainly one of the most pleasurable afternoons I ever had.
Yeah, I remember
Thank
that concert
so
well.
For your memories.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun.
Thanks, Teddy. Let's go to Steve in South County. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, or good afternoon. Hello. It's great to hear Andy and Don and Al. I told Andy this at the wake, but it just struck me so hard I wanted to share it with more people. I don't remember what year it was, Andy, where the family was playing at the Scott Joplin Festival in Sedalia, and Traber had been having some physical problems, and there's nothing, you know, nothing to this extent to where he was gravely ill or anything, but he went onto the stage in a wheelchair, and the collective gasp from that room in that auditorium was so loud and so strong, it brought chills to my, I'd seen him earlier, so I knew what was going on, but it brought chills to me hearing everybody. The respect that showed for Traber was just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the kind of guy that he was. Just brought that out in people.
Yeah, well, in the ragtime world, especially something like the Sedalia Rag Festival that still goes on every June.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, you know, it's like sort of like, you know, to those folks, it's like meeting the Pope or something. You know, it was just, you know, I mean, truly the highest, you know, high priest of ragtime, you know, right there in front of him.
Thanks for that call, Steve. And Steve mentioned, I think, the Scott Joplin Festival. Of course, the Scott Joplin House is just down the street from us here in Grand Center, not very far. And our next caller, Larry, has a memory, I think, of your dad from the Scott Joplin House. Explain that, Larry. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I first like to just express just my sadness. This is the first I've heard that Trevor had died. I have... not from St. Louis, but I've lived here about 20 years, and I used to listen to a program called Syncopation Station on one of the other radio networks. And then when I finally got around to saying, well, Scott Joplin House is here in St. Louis, I should go see it. And I was so impressed with everything there that I became a volunteer working in their archives. And I, through that, became introduced to Trevor and his, you know, many of his CDs that he's done. And I always look forward to, in the Scott Joplin House would have a big ragtime festival around Memorial Day. Look forward to seeing Trevor perform. And I just wanted to ask if the family members wouldn't mind, if they wouldn't mind disclosing where he was buried. I would just love to go put some flowers on his grave.
Oh, well, sure. That's very sweet of you. It's at, excuse me, it's in Afton. It's Sunset Cemetery, I think it's called. It's right along Gravois. It's like 10,000-something Gravois. It's right across the street, actually, from the Cutis Funeral Home, where we had the funeral. It's a big cemetery. It's in Section 5, if that helps.
And your dad spent most of his adult life anyway in the Carondelet neighborhood, is that right?
Yeah, South City, Holly Hills area.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, we want to hear some more music from your father. Up Jumped the Devil will be the next one. What? Anybody say something about that?
Well, actually, that was a fiddle tune. And Traber always liked it. And we just started playing it on Gaslight Square. And people on Gaslight Square liked it, too. They'd say, every now and then, play that fiddle tune. So when we decided to make an album, we just went ahead and put that on it. It's a snappy little tune.
Fiddle. Thank you.
And today on Cityscape, we're remembering and honoring the life and work of ragtime pianist and scholar Trevor Tishner. Here in the studio is son Andy, also St. Louis Ragtimers Don Franz and Al Stricker. And we'd mentioned the other founder of the St. Louis Ragtimers, Bill Mason, and that was actually him on washboard on that particular...
You guys sound really good, man.
And, you know, talking about Gaslight, you were talking about Gaslight Square playing there. I just went and saw some cabaret. The Gaslight Cabaret Festival was on a theater on Boyle between Lindell and Olive, which was, of course, right about in the heart of Gaslight Square. And, Andy, this is, I guess, not a question for you, but Don and Al, what was that like back in its heyday?
Oh, Gaslight Square. Well, it was only about a block long.
But it was the place.
Yeah, and a tornado hit. When they rebuilt the places, suddenly they became nightclubs and restaurants. Excellent restaurants were there. And all kinds of music. They had some rock bands. They had ragtime bands, Dixieland bands, banjo bands.
Don, not a bad place for a young man to be at night?
Right. Back right next door was O'Connell's Pub.
Yeah.
And on several occasions, fully dressed in their outfits, came through the Natchez Queen and back over to O'Connell's.
Yeah, right.
Playing.
Those were the days.
Pipes and
those were the days, right?
Oh, yeah. Gosh. Yeah.
Andy, spoke to your sister, Virginia, who now lives in Southern California somewhere, right?
She's actually around Oakland.
Around Oakland, California. Yeah. She's a musician, too, as you said before. And we talked with her earlier today, and we began by asking her what it was like growing up in the Tishner household.
We were very lucky growing up in a music environment. Our mom basically encouraged us on the piano early on. Her attitude was, well, this house is full of music, and you kids ought to learn to play it, you know. Anyway, so we both were started on piano pretty young. I was 5, my brother a little bit behind me due to him being younger. And about age 12, I decided, hey, this music was fun, and it'd be nice to be able to, you know, go do something with it. So I wanted to learn Maple Leaf Rag, and Dad got all excited and was a great mentor along the way with studying and playing the music. So, you know, he created an environment for my brother and myself that was just, was really fun. You know, we saw all his great friends and the music, and, you know, we just naturally wanted to be a part of it. So anyway, I stayed on piano, but Andrew left piano and moved on to trumpet when he was a teenager. So,
was your dad your teacher?
Actually, Dad was very wise about that. He suggested that we actually recommended, in fact, we had outside teachers the whole way through. So I think that really actually helped on a lot of fronts. But he was certainly always around to, you know, offer suggestions, and definitely if I was working on something and he could tell something wasn't right, he would come over and say, hey, you know, try it this way, or that doesn't sound right. So he was definitely very much a very big inspirational presence, but not our direct teacher.
I know that your dad's mother, your grandmother, was a big influence on him. Was she around when you were growing up?
Yeah, she was. We were very lucky to have our Tishner grandparents right there in St. Louis. She did play piano, and she also played the saxophone. And growing up for Dad, he was influenced because they had a player piano in the house, which is really one of his first exposures to the music. But the fact that, you know, she played piano and encouraged piano. So when I was growing up, we certainly knew her, and I only remember her playing a little bit of piano because, sadly, she had an arthritis problem as she got older, so it was actually kind of difficult for her to play.
Did you study music in college?
I did. I went to Carleton College, Northfield, Minnesota, and I did take college-level piano the whole way through. I ended up in liberal arts degree, didn't major in music, but did study piano the whole way through, and also did, you know, senior recital, for instance. So I remember Dad coming up, in fact, for my senior recital, which was about half ragtime and, you know, half basically classical material. And I remember that being a really great special time that, you know, he was there for me, you know, for that senior recital. So,
what did you do after college?
So after college, I end up basically following, essentially going into accounting and as my day job. Basically, I'm CPA, handling, you know, doing accounting tax. But music's always been a really big part of my life. And having met my husband, Marty Eggers, who is a full-time musician who plays both bass, piano, tuba,
He could have helped open some doors for me here in California, so been able to continue playing. I work in a couple of different jazz bands, and we have a regular thing on Tuesday nights at a place called Pier 23 in San Francisco, right along the water. So basically, having Marty in my life, we've been able to do as much as we can with music, you know, aside from just the busyness of juggling a tax season kind of schedule some days.
Well, that would explain something we found on YouTube of your dad playing in San Francisco in 2008.
Right. What was he doing out at Pier 23 in San Francisco? I was so pleased that I think Rayanne, our friend Rayanne, did those tapes. I was lucky. Usually I could get Dad to come out to California about every other year or so for the West Coast Ragtime Festival, which is a big festival event in November up in Sacramento. And he enjoyed it, but he didn't want to come every year. But he did come out, and when he did come to California, we always tried to pull together a few more things for him to do, including the Pier 23 appearances.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I just would just like to say thank you for taking time to not only reach out to us, but to talk about Dad and present some of his great music, because he certainly has left us with a wonderful musical legacy.
And that's Virginia Traber Tischner's daughter, who we spoke to earlier about her dad and his life and work. And before we take our break, we've had someone very patiently hanging on the phone. I think, Andy, this is a cousin of yours.
Oh, okay.
Mary, calling from the state of California.
Oh, okay.
Mary, you're on Cityscape.
Hi, Andy.
Hey, Mary, how you doing?
I'm great. I had to call in and say thank you so much for the show, because those of us that grew up with Traber and grew up with your family, we didn't get to come to to say goodbye. And mm-hmm. It was such a wonderful way to say goodbye. The music, the everything. Thank God for YouTube. We've got you guys' video. And also, I just want to say how wonderful you've been through this whole thing and just keeping and letting us family members know, you know, how things have been going. So
sure.
I thank God for Facebook. We've gotten connected.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, and I think probably Scott, maybe from Norway, is listening too, another cousin.
Oh, yeah. Got a cousin in Norway, too.
He's the one that gave me the link here, too. So
cool.
I just wanted to give you a big virtual hug and all the band members. It's wonderful to hear their voices, too, and hear these great stories that I'm not privy to, but... I just want to say one thing. I remember that room with the piano rolls. I will never forget that. And could you please clear up something for me? Was he in the Guinness Book of World Records for the most piano rolls?
He doesn't. Believe it or not, Mary, he doesn't hold the record. So,
darn.
He actually had seen. He'd seen a couple that were, he said, dwarfed his, if you could believe that. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, anyway, it's a legacy in my mind anyway. So he was a phenomenal man, and it's wonderful to just hear the music and remember him in the way I do. And just thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for sharing with us, Mary. That's a cousin of Andy's in Virginia's. Mary, calling from California. We do need to take a break. If you'd like to join us, please do at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. We have some more music to listen to. Maybe you at home have memories of the Ragtimers, the St. Louis Ragtimers on the old Goldenrod Showboat. I kind of want to touch on that later, too, because what's happening to that boat? Maybe you know something I don't know. But we'll find out. Again, 382-8255, 382-TALK. This is Cityscape on St. Louis Public Radio. We'll be back after this. I'm Steve Potter. This is Cityscape. And we're spending this hour today looking back at the life and the work of ragtime pianist and scholar Traber Tischner, who passed away last month at the age of 74 in the studio with son Andy and two of the founding members of the St. Louis Ragtimers, in addition to Traber, Al Stricker and Don Franz, and one of the members who's not with us today, Bill Mason, who's out there somewhere, I presume, right? Well, before I go any further, we want to hear from someone our listeners also know very well. And I find it a little odd to talk to Dennis Owsley in the afternoon, because whenever I hear Dennis, it's Sunday nights. Dennis has been the longtime host of Jazz Unlimited on St. Louis Public Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 o'clock. And I guess he set the alarm or something. He's joining us now. Hi, Dennis.
How are you doing? Glad to be here. And, of course, it is kind of sad about Traber, but I'm glad to be here.
What was your relationship with Traber, Dennis?
Well, back in 1986, when I started research on my jazz history of St. Louis, I interviewed him. And he told me all kinds of good stories about the ragtime era and some of the stories about the earlier stuff. And I'd see him every once in a while at various gigs and things like that, that we would happen to run into.
You know, I would think, tell me if I'm wrong, Dennis, that there wouldn't be the amount of people that knew a lot about ragtime. I mean, they wouldn't be crawling around everywhere, right?
That's absolutely right. And one of the things that really impressed me about Craver is that not only was he a fan and a musician, but he was a scholar. And too often in my business, which is jazz, and of course I consider jazz as an extension of ragtime, there are too many fans, but not enough scholars. And he was really a scholar, and I really respect him for that.
What do you think his contribution was as far as being a scholar of ragtime to the history of ragtime and what we know about it today? What role did he play in that?
Well, I don't think his work was the first. I think the first of that stuff was a band by the name of Rudy Blesch. Now, and I may be wrong on that. But, again, he brought a bunch of stuff out about St. Louis ragtime that I don't think anybody else knew. And that's important, I think, for all of us here in St. Louis, is to have the correct story. And, of course, I don't know how many years. I mean, gosh, 1956 is, I think, the earliest recordings I have of him in my collection. And so that's a long time. That's even longer than I've been a student of jazz.
Yeah. Well, before we let you go, Dennis, you mentioned something about ragtime being an extension of the blues. So could you be a little more specific what that relationship is and how important St. Louis was to ragtime and maybe Scott Joplin?
Well, the interesting thing about St. Louis, first of all, was it was basically the center for ragtime in this country around the turn of the century. And one of the things that I learned from Traver was that the real king of ragtime was not Scott Joplin here in town, but a man by the name of Tom Turpin, who published the first African-American rag. And Turpin had been here much longer than Joplin was. And Joplin spent most of his time here composing and not performing, just from what I could make out about that history. But St. Louis is an extremely important place in the development of the American music that we call jazz, our classical music, because ragtime and blues are really the roots of this music. Here we are sitting right here in St. Louis that was the center for ragtime for a long, long time.
Well, Dennis, we appreciate you being a part of the show today. Before I let you go, though, what do you have planned for this Sunday?
Oh, this Sunday is another one of my things about live in New York. And then the following Sunday, between the hours of 9 and 10, I'm going to do a tribute to Traber. Nice. On the first hour of the 23rd of March.
Jazz Unlimited with Dennis Owsley, Sundays, 9 p.m. And find out more about that. Go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page. You can find out about Dennis's show and all the rest of it. Dennis Owsley, thanks so much for being a part of it today.
Well, thanks for calling me up. Bye-bye.
And before we go any further, let's hear more music from Traber Tischner. And Andy, this is King Porter Stomp, and this is something you did with your dad?
Yeah, Dad and I played this. I mean, this dates back to an early, this is a Jelly Roll Morton tune, King Porter Stomp, and he did, Jelly Roll did some early recordings with King Oliver himself, I believe, doing as a duet, trumpet and piano. So. We'll be right back.
And we're listening to the music of Trey Petitioner, who passed away last month. We're here with his son, Andy, and with St. Louis Ragtimers, Don Franz and Al Stricker. You guys played the last time with Traber and the Ragtimers at the Sheldon last fall. What are your plans now? Do you, now that Traber's gone, have you had even time to think about it?
Well, we have a couple of piano players that
understudies.
Yeah, understudies. Yeah, but they've expressed an interest in playing.
So anyway, you want to continue, that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Those are big shoes to fill. That's got to be, you know, not an easy thing.
Yes, right. But one of the players, he, over the years, I think he has probably written down about 90% of everything we do. So that's one we lead, and the other player is also a very good player. So
we just have actually moments left. I do want to bring up something really quickly. There's going to be a memorial concert, and I know that's in the very early stages, Andy. A memorial concert for your dad sometime. What can you tell us right now?
Well, it's, if I had, the earliest time frame would be maybe October, November time frame, and we're sort of partnering with the St. Louis Jazz Club. Don't know where, don't know when exactly, but, you know, several months from now, just want to do a proper, you know, proper musical tribute to
Dad. Well, you know, you let us know when you know, and we'll pass it on to our listeners.
That'd be great.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, gentlemen. We could go on. This has been fascinating. We've been looking back at the life of ragtime pianist and scholar Trey Petitioner with his son Andy and with St. Louis Ragtimers Al Stricker and Don Franz. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here and sharing your memories and thoughts.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Let us know where you are in the future.
Thank you. Okay, thanks.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. And now commentator Nancy Kranzberg shares these thoughts about the history of music.
I just had another incredible read. The story of music from Babylon to the Beatles goes all the way back to the Paleolithic caves of Chauvet, France, to the music of today. Howard Goodall cites a 1995 find in a Slovenian cave of a flute made of bear bone and says, "Our own day-to-day survival may no longer depend on our ability to sing, but our ancient ancestors were onto something that applies to modern lives too." Study after study around the world has shown that singing enables infants to train their brains and memories to recognize pitch differentiation as a preparation for the full development of spatial awareness. In the Paleolithic age, this was an absolutely crucial skill. If survival depended on knowing from which direction a wild animal's cry was coming, what size it was, and what mood it might be in. What child doesn't try to whistle through his teeth or through his thumbs or make drumming sounds with his fist or other instruments? And oh, how music tears through our hearts and our souls, lifts our spirits, and can change our mood. Goodall talks of composers writing uplifting music when a third of the population of Europe was being wiped out by the Black Death in the 14th century. A day doesn't go by when I'm not moved or soothed by music or make or hear a reference to some sort of musical theme, from hearing Happy Birthday to hopping in an elevator and hearing typical elevator music. I had a meeting last week with Art Silverblatt, a professor at Webster University. We were talking about media literacy, and he talked of different interpretations of what we see and hear. He asked if the terrifying, scary score of the movie Jaws was changed to the soothing sounds of a waltz, how would we view the shark? Maybe the shark would look balletic in the blue waters of the ocean. In a walk through the St. Louis Art Museum's African and pre-Columbian sections, one would see musical instruments and references to music throughout the galleries, and there were many traditional paintings with pictures of musical instruments as well. The Sheldon has several galleries which feature jazz and blues themes and often features exhibitions of the famous Hartenberger World Musical Instruments collections. There are pieces from cultures virtually all over the world. And listening to our wonderful St. Louis Chamber Chorus in one of the churches or temples in which they perform reminds me of how music has always played a major role in religion and its liturgy. The Hebrew chants of the cantor or the masses or other ceremonial rites of various churches are always mood-altering, and oh, the wonderful sounds of the Bach Society's annual Christmas candlelight concert always brings tears to my eyes. Goodall makes reference to the first printed Christmas carols. He says the first first ones were published in 1521 by William Caxton's appropriately named apprentice and successor, Wynkyn de Worde. The St. Louis Symphony, Opera Theater of St. Louis, and Jazz at the Bistro are all wonderful venues to listen to and savor world-class music in comfortable, enjoyable settings, and soon the Muni and stages will be filling the air with their wonderful productions. And of course, the Sheldon is one of the most acoustically perfect settings in the world to hear every type of music from folk to classical to jazz and blues. And of course, as Rich O'Donnell, retired principal percussionist of the St. Louis Symphony, professor of music and one of the founders of the New Music Circle and Herding Cats Collective, loves to respond to those who claim not to like new music and say that they know what they like, he says, "You like what you know. Open your minds and ears." Well, somewhere there's music, how high the moon. As usual, I have to say, you don't need the jillion-dollar tickets of a New York production to hear the best music. You can stay right here in our fantastic St. Louis. I'm Nancy Kranzberg.
Nancy Kranzberg has been involved in the arts community for some 30 years on numerous arts-related boards. Next week on Cityscape, we'll talk with the principal timpanist of the St. Louis Symphony, Shannon Wood, about a chamber music concert featuring his work. We'll also preview a festival of short LGBT plays. And in the next installment of Soundbites produced with Sauce Magazine, we'll take a look at what it takes to make a successful restaurant. Join Don Marsh Monday for St. Louis on the Air when he'll talk with Cokie Roberts about her new children's book examining the wives, mothers, sisters, and daughters who helped forge our nation. Cityscape is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with assistance from Camille Phillips, Aaron Dorr, and Amanda Hunnigfort. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Cityscape is made possible in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Cityscape is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. I'm Steve Potter, and join us next time.